Merry Christmas, everyone. Welcome to a holiday version of the Business Lunch. I'm Steve Bertrand. All right, this might be a bit of a curveball, but it occurs to me that many of you listening have been or will be going to church services for this Christmas, and at family dinners, world events likely will be discussed. So on this day when we celebrate a great world religion, and in the spirit of Christmas, really, I thought it might be a good chance to learn about another great world religion, one that we hear a lot about, but maybe don't know so much about. Islam is in the news every day, and it's rarely good news. How much do you really know about that faith? Ahmed Rehab and Fatima Ahmed are here to help with all of that. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So, this is going to be sort of like an Islam 101, and I want you to feel free to say, that was a really stupid question, Steve. Because, well, you know, I don't know about that because it was pretty amazing to me when I started to think about this and how much I thought I knew and how much really I don't know. And I put it out on Facebook. A lot of people had questions, too. So here we are at Christmas. Let's start with Jesus. Jesus is part of Islam. Yeah, tell me that.
Well, the way it's important to understand that Islam is not a new religion per se. That basically it's the culmination of the relationship of God with humanity that started with Adam, that went through Abraham and all of the prophets in the Bible, that went through Jesus as a prophet, which whom we believe is a prophet, Moses before him, and then sort of culminated with Muhammad as the final messenger of God. In that sense, Christianity and Judaism are predecessors or earlier chapters of the Islamic sort of legacy. And by Islam, it just means submission to God, and I prefer the definition because, you know, it's in Arabic, it means something different than in English. It's not submission as in, you know, raise your hands up and you have no will, but rather it's your free will, you willing to be with God, basically.
So Jesus is one of the prophets. Muhammad is the final prophet.
Correct.
There is the angel Gabriel as well.
And he's involved in the stories of Islam and the Quran just as much as in the Bible and the Torah.
So it's Christmas. Christians celebrate Christ's birth. Is there a similar birth narrative or celebration for Muhammad?
We have a celebration for Muhammad. Muslims sort of go back and forth and debate whether it's something that is sort of authentic in the faith. For us, Muhammad is more than a person who was born on a certain date. It's the values and the character of the prophet.
Sure.
And that's what a lot of Muslims want to emphasize.
It's fascinating to me what I know and what I don't, and how what I know comes to me, right? So if I'm going to speak of the holidays of Islam, I'm going to say Eid and Ramadan. Mm-hmm. Others? Or there must be others.
There are others. These are the main ones. And Ramadan is a holy month of fasting and spiritual meditation, of lack of excess and basically modesty in your character.
Serious stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's basically a sort of discipline of the soul. Eid, on the other hand, is sort of the opposite. It's sort of the day where you celebrate, where you get together with family. It's more akin, I suppose, to how Christmas is today. It's a celebration.
Well, that's what I was going to think, because, you know, when we say Merry Christmas, we say Happy Easter. You know, they are joyful occasions. But when I think of Islam, again, I'm seeing it in the news. I'm not seeing the joy, but I'm assuming it's a joyful religion.
Yeah, absolutely. Particularly for us on Eid, we definitely say, you know, Eid Mubarak or Happy Eid, depending on, you know, who you're speaking with. But just as, you know, you would say Merry Christmas to anybody on Christmas Day and you celebrate it, it's the same concept for us as well. It's a family celebration that you do with your family, your friends, your neighbors. And so it's something that's very important to us as well.
All right, so I live in Deerfield, which has a sizable Jewish population. A lot of my friends, I have a lot of Jewish friends. How does that sound? I have a lot of Muslim friends.
Great.
No, but so, you know, the joke is where I live that if you're Jewish on Christmas, you go to a Chinese restaurant and then go to a movie theater.
Mm-hmm.
If you're Muslim, living in a predominantly Christian area, what happens on Christmas Day?
We are taking the cue from our Jewish brothers and sisters. I mean, basically, look, and this always dawns on me like it's a surprise, but I normally don't eat out, but I happen to choose the days in which everything's closed. Usually it's Thanksgiving or Christmas Day, and then suddenly I'm like, why is everything closed? But it's a happy occasion. I mean, you know, I wish my neighbors and my friends Merry Christmas. I'd like to wish your listeners a Merry Christmas. It takes nothing away from me as a Muslim. I'm all for the Merry Christmas. You know, I'm not big on the happy holidays.
What if, really?
Well, yeah, because, I mean, if it's Christmas, it's totally okay to embrace the fact that it's Christmas. It's a wonderful occasion. It's got a great legacy, great history to it. Absolutely. And people who practice or who, you know, observe it religiously, then, you know, I'd like to sort of respect that and acknowledge that.
So when people wish you a Merry Christmas?
I wish them Merry Christmas right back. I have a little bit of a different personal experience. I always grew up with, I guess, kind of the encouragement that it's important to learn about other religions, and other people's beliefs. So even at a younger age, you know, I actually went to Catholic school when I was younger, and I have been to Midnight Mass, and I've been to plenty of churches, and I've sat through sermons and, you know, listened to those, and kind of had the opportunity to sit in and listen and take in like the atmosphere and everyone around me. And honestly, Christmas is by far one of my favorite times of the year.
I actually would have to agree. I mean, in my household, we're watching Hallmark movies pretty much.
Oh, no.
I know.
Would you call my wife? Because she wants to watch those all of the time. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to do it.
Well, you know, it's my wife who actually sort of pressures me in that direction. But, you know, maybe I'm a better husband than you, Steve.
You could be.
I go along. So, but, yeah, we got a couple Christmas trees. I got no problem with that. You know, other Muslims might. And, again, for me, it's not a religious thing. Yeah. I mean, when I put up a Christmas tree, it's more about the sort of the mood and the festivities and the coziness of it. I grew around that kind of thing. For others, they take it like, oh, well, you know, this is religious. And for me, Christmas is religious for a lot of people, but for me, it's sort of a tradition that I grew up around.
My neighbors call it a Hanukkah bush.
There you go.
But, you know, I think you said something very telling there. You said, I have a couple of Christmas trees. Other people might disagree with that. I think that's one of our misconceptions in the non-Islam communities. You know, we tend to think of it as a coherent, as a singular
absolutely
sort of group.
Not.
And
it's
just
you're
so
right.
Not
it's
true.
One of the key misunderstandings. I mean, you know, I put up a picture one time, and I didn't even mean to put up a photo of the Christmas tree. It was just of me and my family, and one happened to be in the background.
Uh-huh.
And there was this huge discussion on Facebook on my wall about it. And many people agreed with it and said, this is great. Other people said, you know, I don't have to prove anything to anybody. And mind you, this isn't by any means me trying to prove anything to anybody, trying to say, oh, look at me, I'm integrated, you know, I fit in.
Right.
This is just a personal expression of something I'm comfortable with in the privacy of my home, something I grew up around. I'm very clear about what it means and what it doesn't mean. I'm a full Muslim through and through. I don't celebrate Christmas religiously. You know, of course, I would say Merry Christmas to somebody who does. But for me, this is just a cultural expression that I'm comfortable with.
Yeah, I definitely have to agree with Ahmed on that. You know, it's just something, again, like he said, it's something that he grew up around. Just and the same goes for me as well. So I definitely understand the importance that some people, the religious importance it has for certain for some people. But again, you know, we grew up around it, and so for us, it's just.
And I would just add that, you know, I'd be the last to vilify those who disagree. I mean, whether they're Jews or Muslims who feel uncomfortable with this sort of thing, they have good reasons. They say we don't want
to
dilute our, you know, religious identity with our kids who are growing up in this dominant culture, and we want to preserve for them their religious, you know, uniqueness. And I totally buy that. That's fine. You know?
Well, the churches are full on this Christmas. In the Catholic Church, we call them Christers, right? Christmas and Easter. You know, because there are a lot of Christians who don't regularly go to service, and a lot of Jews who don't regularly go to temple. How is that the same for Muslims?
I mean, we go to Friday prayer more than we go to, and when I say we, it's just as a majority, than the daily five prayers, which are all held in mosques.
Interesting. Oh, okay.
Yeah. We have more services than you do for the most part. It's five times a day, but most people will go on the Friday. And even some won't even, you know, go on that on the Friday. There are those who are just not mosque going, Muslims.
Well, how many, the percentage, but how many will pause daily for five prayers, for the five times daily?
Oh, that's hard to.
I mean, even I if they're not at a mosque, but just anywhere in there.
Oh, you know, it depends if a person identifies as observant and whether religion is important to them. But in the Muslim community, like any other, there are those who take their religion seriously and those who are sort of like, you know,
right. Well, I guess that's my point, isn't it? Yeah. In the Catholic Church, Catholics go to church. They go to the closest one. You know, they go to the one in the neighborhood. And so when I hear about this imam or this mosque, I wonder if there's do Muslims go to the mosque closest to them, or do the populations have differences, you know, where people travel from one to the other?
I would like to say that for It honestly depends. There are some people who will travel, depending on which sect of Islam you're a part of. They will go to their closest mosque. But, you know, there's not like a particular one like that you have to go to if it's in your neighborhood that you can only attend that one.
Well, I guess I'm bringing it up for the political reasons, right? Because people say we need to watch this imam or we need to surveil this mosque. I mean, are they all interchangeable?
They're not interchangeable, for sure. I mean, different mosques, you know, and different imams have different styles of preaching, etc. But for the most part, most Muslims will frequent any mosque that's close to them when it's the time of prayer. There is no membership, so it's not like you can only go to the, you know, the club that you're a member
of. Do they pass a basket like they do?
They'll do that sometimes when it's fundraising.
Come on, stupid question. You could say it.
I mean, there's fundraising. It's just not at the actual, you know, prayer service itself, during the actual prayer ritual.
Sunni and Shiite, the two major sects, right? 90% Sunni, 10% Shiite.
Yeah.
Is that like Protestants and Catholics here?
You know,
I mean, in the States, not in the Middle East or anywhere else in the world, but in the States.
I mean, historically, it's different theologically in the sense that the difference between them isn't as major, I would say. That there's a lot in common between Sunnis and Shia as far as the theology is concerned. Mm-hmm. For example, in terms of the creed itself, in terms of the belief in one God and Muhammad as his prophet, as the final prophet. Etc. The difference tends to be somewhat political and somewhat in the organization of the clergy. Actually, in the Sunni tradition, you don't have a clergy. That's one of the main differences. Things like that. But, you know, it's conceivable that we would pray in the same hall.
You don't have a clergy. You don't have an imam leading the services?
The imam is a role more than sort of, it's not clergy in that sense. So I could be an imam. You know, if I lead a prayer, the technical
at
term
the moment,
for that
at
is
the
an
moment.
Imam.
You could be of the moment.
At the moment that I'm leading the prayer.
Okay.
There are those who do this more full-time, those who have acquired certain scholarly knowledge. They're actually more scholars than they are anything else. The term used is alim, but we say imam as a term of endearment because they also lead the prayer because they have so much knowledge. But it's not an actual sort of revealed role that you acquire somehow.
Well, so, you know, I'd thrown out on Facebook that I was going to talk to the two of you, and I asked people, you know, what questions they would have. And one of them was about the hierarchy. Is there sort of a clerical hierarchy?
Not
at
all.
In the Catholic Church, there is very much. In Baptist, there's nothing like that.
No, because there's no clergy to begin with. It's a very flat religion. And that's good and that's bad. It's good in the sense that, consider this wonderful, lush, open country club with no fence around it. You can already imagine the good and the bad, okay?
Right.
The good is that everybody's welcome. It's truly democratic. It's true. You know, you have all races. We never really had a serious problem in Islam where, you know, this nationality or this race or, you know, this group of people can't come in. You know, it's sort of from the very beginning, the companions of the prophet included black man, a white man, the poor, the rich, men and women, etc. On the other hand, because there is no fence around it, and this pertains more to the situation today, crazies can jump in and you can't really kick them out because there's no expulsion of people. If they declare themselves in the faith, you can't really come and say, no, you're not. So then you're stuck with people who are sort of misrepresenting your religion and claiming to represent it, and they're still within the fold of Islam, whether you like it or not.
Okay, another one I got, no surprise, is the hijab question, right? You knew that was coming. is that by sect or is that completely individual? And help me understand that a little bit more.
It is definitely more on an individual basis. It is very much the woman's decision to make. While there are a lot of, I guess, political instances in which, you know, that people might believe other things, it is very much the woman's own individual decision to make. I personally am actually the only woman in my family who wears the hijab. I chose to wear it. And for me, it's something that is personally something very, very important to me. It's who I am. It reminds me on a daily basis that to remember my morals and to be humble and, you know, to always treat others with the best of character. And also to be, in order for, you know, if you expect people to respect you, then you have to respect them as well. And that's also a constant reminder. And, you know, it really just represents who I am on a daily basis.
Do members of your family say, what are you thinking? Why are you doing that?
You know, they definitely understood to an extent as to why I made the decision. But it is a struggle, honestly. You know, it's hard to explain sometimes.
It's a struggle within or without? I mean, it's just...
A little bit of both.
Yeah.
You know, I think mostly it was my fault because I caught my family off guard a little bit. I kind of just showed up at home one day and I just happened to wear it. And so it caught
up. So it's like a tattoo.
And it, you
in
know,
a lot of ways.
And nobody was against it by any means. You know, my family was very supportive and they are still very supportive. But still, you know, have a lot of questions as to what made me, you know, choose to make that decision to wear it and make it such a big part of who I am. I mean, you automatically know that I'm a Muslim woman walking down the street.
Right.
You know, you're not going to second guess. Mm-hmm. I wonder where she's from. And so it honestly, it changes your life. So
you said something interesting there. You're obviously a Muslim woman. You're not going to wonder where she's from. As if you were a Muslim woman walking down the street in the United States, you must be from somewhere else, right? You just kind of did.
Yeah, I guess.
That's how it's perceived, but that's
well,
not
that
how
is, that's what I mean. So in a way, she sort of took.
I mean, I guess that's definitely how it's perceived. You know, like I mentioned, it is definitely a life changer.
Right. So in a way, you're wearing it as a sign of liberation.
Yeah.
And I think
absolutely.
A lot of non-Muslims would look at it and think it's a sign of oppression.
Yeah.
Right. It's just the opposite.
I think you hit the nail on the head. And my younger sister would tell you that she was frustrated with the objectification and mm-hmm. sexualization of women in this society, and she walked around feeling like she had to succumb to that. And this was sort of her rebellion against it. And in many ways, that's the idea. It's about modesty, but it's also about self-respect and elevating yourself to a point where you're not seen for your sexuality as a woman, but rather for your character. That's the idea that a lot of Muslim women have about the hijab.
Another Facebook question, and one I know that you're prepared for in here, you know, and maybe we spoke to it a little bit when you talked about how there's not really a hierarchy. People think Muslims don't stand up to terrorism, and nothing can be further from the truth, but that's the impression people have. Maybe it is about the hierarchy, I mean, but how do you counter that?
I would actually venture to say that nobody has stood up to terrorism more than Muslims on this planet. Let's take a look at a few facts that most listeners may not be aware of. The first is Muslims by far are the greatest victims of terrorism worldwide by number
and that's,
by length
I think
of history.
That is so lost in this
yes.
country. I don't think people, I mean, they, intellectually, if they stop and bring it in, that must be clear to them. But I don't think emotionally that occurs to people.
We have more beef with terrorism, I think, than anybody else, just based on being victims of it alone. And then secondly, Muslims have died fighting terrorism more than anybody else. They've actually not just condemned it or spoken against it, but actually put out their lives to try to defeat terrorism in many countries, in many places, in many police forces, in many militaries. And it goes on today. But then the third point to understand is that, you know, when we condemn it here by words, we actually don't want to. Not because we don't condemn it, but because it's so stupid to have to condemn it when it's so obvious that we do. And the mere condemnation is sort of offensive to us because it's almost like asking you, hey, did you condemn slavery? Did you condemn child abuse? Would you condemn rape? I mean, obviously, if you're a decent human being, it goes without saying. So the fact, imagine if you had to actually send out a press release through your church declaring every time something happens that you condemn this thing.
That I condemned the gangland shooting last week.
Right. I mean, it goes without saying. And I think just the way we lead our lives should be sufficient to show what our values are. You know, these doctors and lawyers and engineers and teachers and cab drivers, all the good people who lead righteous lives and upright lives, that's their statement of condemnation of not just terrorism, but really all and any acts of evil and hate to society.
One of the reasons I had you on is my son went to a Montessori school when he was young, and his first fast friend was this kid named Mohsen. Just the sweetest boy, and you know, his parents, and I don't know if this is typical, but his parents were so protective of this boy. We couldn't take him to a movie or to a restaurant because only his parents could drive him. We could never drive him anywhere. And there was one time Noah had a birthday party at an ice skating rink, and Mohsen, you know, he'd been sick all day and he wanted to go, and he convinced his mom that he was cured, he wasn't sick. And I walk out of the skating rink to go to get the cake out of the car or something. I don't know why, but I'm on a sidewalk, and there's Mohsen. His mom is holding his head. The boy is being sick on the sidewalk, but he just wanted so badly to be at this party. And, you know, the boy's separated, and Mohsen, like my son, is turning 18 this year. And the idea that people who look like me are looking at him and making these foul judgments based on the way he looks, it just breaks my heart. It breaks my heart.
And the understanding and the empathy of our fellow Americans as to that point that you just made really means so much to us. And I'd have to say that as much as we talk about the bigotry and the misunderstanding and the foul, vile sort of intentional attitudes of hate and bigotry against Muslims, there is an America that is very much against this, that is for embracing, you know, the pluralism that is America, the diversity that is America, and that is for understanding things which we don't know. Like, I don't know much about Hinduism, I'll admit. But I don't have a negative reaction.
Oh, that's
when
the next
Hindu
show. Hang out. They're coming in.
Oh, great. I'd love to ask them questions. But my point is, I wouldn't, you know, as a result of this lack of knowledge, then say I'm suspicious of Hindus or I'm prepared to sort of stereotype against it. No. You know, I'll look at each individual as an individual, as a human, because that's what humans are. And as a religion, I'll study it from the right sources, not from the blogs or from, you know, hate radio.
Right.
And so on and so forth. So that's all I ask of my fellow Americans, is that you're right to be curious should you see these headlines all over the place. But you also have a responsibility as a human being, as an intellectual being, as an intelligent being. If you're really interested, you know, seek the facts from proper sources and don't judge people you don't know. You can't hate something you don't know. You don't know me. How can you hate me? You've never met me before.
That's Ahmed Rehab. And, well, we've met you now a little bit, and I hope we know more about it.
And I hope you don't hate me as a result.
No, Fatima I'm worried about. Fatima Ahmed as well. Thanks to both of you. Really very helpful, and I appreciate it. And, you know, I guess I'll say Merry Christmas. I thought earlier
Absolutely. I wish
you the peace and joy of the season. But, thank you very much for listening, everyone. This has been a special version, a different version of the Business Lunch. Merry Christmas. I'm Steve Bertrand.